Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The gun violence of the racist mass shooting in Buffalo is in the news, and so is the gun violence that takes lives individually in New York City. At a news conference yesterday, Mayor Adams rolled out a pilot program using a technology that the reporters in attendance needed to pass through on their way in.
When you came in today, those are not metal detectors. And sometimes people, you know, get them mixed up. Those are not metal detectors. They detect guns. That is what they detect. Many of you remember my good friend, former colleague in the police department, James E. Davis, was shot with a 9mm because someone brought a gun inside the building. We're going after guns, and that's what those devices are. It's a pilot project.
The technology could be used at subway stations and other places if the pilot program passes the mayor's muster. It's controversial with skeptics of who that technology might entrap, or people concerned about who that technology might entrap in the criminal justice system without having committed a crime. On one of our shows last week, we had Daily News columnist Harry Siegel, who talked about how the debate over bail reform is too narrowly focusing on one piece of a larger picture, which the mayor describes as only around 700 people, the larger picture, 700 people in our city of 8 million doing most of the shooting. But Harry Siegel said leaders of the NYPD are skeptical of the current justice system's ability to keep those 700 off the street.
They're skeptical that there's all that much space to turn things around, not because of bail reform, which sort of became the symbol or the red herring, I would say, of this fight, but because of a broader justice system that really isn't equipped to remove from circulation, often by incarcerating the relatively small number of New Yorkers who are consistently involved in shootings, either because they're shooting someone or because they're getting shot. And what I keep hearing is if those people recirculate.
Daily News columnist Harry Siegel here last week. Now we'll get another view from Antonine Pierre, executive director of the advocacy group, the Brooklyn Movement Center. She has her own Daily News op-ed called What Mayor Adams Gets Right and Wrong About Gun Violence. The center also has a new report called Invest in Black Futures, a Public Health Roadmap for Safe New York City Neighborhoods. Thanks for coming on, Antonine. Welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you. So your Daily News op-ed begins with the fact that you're old enough to remember the 1990s violence crisis in New York City and acknowledges we are now in a new violence crisis. Being an advocate for less emphasis on the police, and we'll get into some of what you're for in the new report, what's your take on how the violence crisis of the 1990s came to as much of an end as it did?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in the 90s, our mayor, Mayor Giuliani, you know, he really instituted all of these policies, really instituting broken windows policing throughout New York City. And what happened in the 90s is that the people who needed resources and were doing enacting violence in communities because they needed resources were then just warehoused and routed into incarceration. And what we're seeing now is that the children of people who were locked up in the 90s are now stuck in the same violent crisis, and we're trying to answer the crisis in the same way with more police. But we've got the data that didn't work that time.
So what did work that time, if it wasn't just policing? Because you're almost making an argument that policing did work that time, at least to take down crime, but it had this horrible side effect of mass incarceration.
Absolutely. Well, I think when we're talking about taking down crime and we're talking about getting to what Eric Adams talks about, right? Getting to the root causes of gun violence. So if we're treating the problem of crime with this sort of knee-jerk reaction of policing, then what we're not doing is we're not treating the houselessness, we're not treating the mental health issues, we're not treating the substance use issues. And what is happening is that, yeah, you can lock folks up and they'll leave your communities, right? Like you literally sever the people from community who are causing harm and violence, but they don't disappear. They're always going to come back. And the only way to actually make sure that a future generation of New Yorkers is not in the same kind of violence crisis is to make sure that we are getting in at that root, that we are providing the resources, that we are making the room for the transformation that incarceration says that it does, but in fact really just sends folks back home with lots more problems.
So on the Harry Siegel conversation, which you told us you heard and wanted to continue the conversation from, do you think getting those 700 people off the street, if that's even the right number, who allegedly are ramping up the violence, and a longer-term investment in equality strategy for fighting crime and injustice, as you're advocating, are compatible? Can both things happen at the same time, or do you have to oppose one to achieve the other, as you see it?
Right. Well, one thing we need to really understand is that this crisis, this violence crisis that we're in, it is a public health crisis. And what we're seeing, this crime that we're seeing, it is the impact of concurrent crises of policing, of incarceration, and of gun violence. And these are the vibes in our neighborhoods. This is what we are experiencing. And so if we want to actually be able to undermine those things, we're going to need to bring in those resources. We're going to need to treat this as a public health issue. And what happens is when we bring in policing, that's a public safety solution. And so, you know, we want to make sure that public health is not just being used as the rhetoric. It's not just being used because it sounds nice, but that we actually think like public health researchers and public health professionals. And we say, well, you know, if violence is a problem, you know, in the public health world, that's a contagion. And so we want to think about, well, how do we contain gun violence, right? And that means that we're going to have to, one, we're going to have to bring in the crisis intervention programs that are actually doing the work that are going to stop the violence right now. And then we also, at the same time, yes, we have to bring in the housing. When we see these encampments being broken up by police, what happens to those people? Where do they go? We've already seen numbers that very few of them go into the shelter system because it's so unsafe. So these things do need to be happening at the same time. The public safety response to social service issues, we've talked about this time and time again, and even NYPD top brass has said that they are not the best folks to be doing this kind of work. And so if we can stop this, if we can contain gun violence now, then we can also look to the next generation. We can look to 30 years from now and say, what do we want our communities to look like? What resources do we need to give people now so that they can grow into, that we can all grow into a safe New York?
And listeners, we're going to give you the chance to answer that question. What resources should be invested into what communities now to give all New Yorkers a chance to grow into a more crime-free city in 30 years? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And without the cycles of poverty, which continue to be so persistent in New York and in America, that lead periodically to outbreaks of gun violence. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer for Antonin Pierre from the Brooklyn Movement Center. The Daily News op-ed that you wrote is called What Mayor Adams Gets Right and Gets Wrong About Gun Violence. What do you think he's getting right?
Well, he's getting that public health narrative right. You know, there's so many clips of the mayor talking about gun violence as a public health problem. And we are so happy that the work that we've been doing to talk about these public health issues, to talk about how Black lives are being prematurely cut short because of lack of resources, we're so happy that that is happening. And, you know, we need the public health piece to be not a talking point, but we need funding to go behind it, right? We live in a capitalist society. Show me the money if you're really honest about public health as like the way that we're viewing these current violence issues we're in.
Do you have a position on these gun detectors that the mayor says are not metal detectors, but more specific to guns?
Absolutely. I mean, look, we're in this place where we're in this conversation about police accountability where, you know, our mayor is talking a lot about nicer policing strategies, right? Like more safe policing strategies. And at the end of the day, what people actually need are resources, right? Like if we're looking, these metal detectors, they're being piloted in hospitals and in schools. So we're looking at the people who are the most vulnerable, who lack the most resources. And we don't see, you know, we see the policing that's being brought in. We see the vision around policing. But what we're not seeing is the vision around ending the structural violence that plagues Black and brown neighborhoods, the lack of historic disinvestment. When we talk about generational wealth, if we're not treating these issues, then, you know, all we're doing is creating more funding lines for the NYPD.
It gets back to the both and question, though, right? Can the mayor be investing in long-term public health strategies, as you describe them, and make good on his rhetoric about that at the same time as doing something like putting technologies in places that are vulnerable to gun violence, as well as having vulnerable people without that being working against the longer term cause?
Yeah, it's not possible, in part because of one of the findings of our report really is that policing in and of itself is a public health crisis, right? So you have a mayor who's talking about gun violence as a public health crisis and is solving it and is solving these issues with policing. But then like what we're not seeing is the alignment with groups like the American Public Health Association that are clear that violence is a public health crisis and that police violence is a public health crisis. So, you know, we've got a mayor who has in the past said that, you know, he was a whistleblower, that he's done a lot of this work around reform, but the work is still to be done because, you know, our folks, when something unsafe happens, when something bad happens, when there's harm and there's violence in our communities, we don't know who to call because we know that calling the police brings also the threat of police violence. So just logically, it seems impossible to be able to advance a public health strategy around violence that includes police.
That includes police at all? Are you a police abolitionist? Oh, did you hear the question? Did we lose Antonin? Did we lose me? Oh, I'm here. Okay, but we lost Antonin. So listeners, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you want to get in on this conversation or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Meantime, here's the mayor from his news conference yesterday again, mentioning some of the other things that he's doing too, as he discussed with state legislators in Albany the other day.
There were some unbelievable ideas that came out of this body. They will help us in getting information out to their constituency, such as earned income tax credit, child care, domestic violence, shelters, education, dealing with crime.
And we have Antonin back. So based on that clip, is the mayor on the way to the right kind of mix with those things, plus other things he talks about, like 100,000 youth summer jobs this summer? And then I'll come back to what you said about can't do this with police and how far you take that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have been calling for funding going into these resources for a couple of years now, right? Like that we need to move money in the budget into these places. SYP has been one of the most top line demands here. And so there is, you know, it's great.
That's
that the
Summer Youth Employment Program, SYEP. Go ahead.
Yes. And so it's really great that the mayor is listening to communities and is moving in that direction. I think where there is so much deep concern is, you know, are we tokenizing the bringing in of resources, right? Are the resources a talking point? Because when we look at the budget, what we see is an increase in $182 million in the NYPD budget. And we don't see those kinds of increases. We don't see the kind of energy and the fervor. And what we hear from Mayor Adams, even today, like we hear on a fairly daily basis that crime is the problem. But, you know, BMC, the Brooklyn Movement Center, we are a member-based organization. And when we're in conversations with our folks, what we're hearing is housing is the problem, right? That like people are getting pushed out of their housing, that people are spending over 50% of their income on housing. And that's not being addressed. That's not being raised as a crisis in the same way that the fear-mongering is happening around crime.
And to what you were saying just before your audio cut out for a minute, I heard you to say that they can't come up with longer term solutions that include the police. How far do you go with that?
Yeah, I mean, look, when we look again at communities where there is violence happening and people want it to end and they have a hesitation around calling the police, that should let us know that the police cannot be the answer here, and that what we need to be doing is really thinking about, what does safety actually look like? What are the ways that we keep each other safe, right? And so when we, you know, I think about instances like Eric Garner being killed, like as being like a part of the community, a person who would break up fights between young people, right? I think what we're looking for is, how do we actually bring in the kind of transformative justice resources that actually move and create more safety in community? And I have to say, there's just the levels of distrust that folks have with the NYPD really shows that their reliance on the NYPD is out of a scarcity, out of a lack of anything else. But then when we've done work like around street harassment and gender-based violence, when we've done it, like had these conversations with people in the street about how they want to feel safe, they're not, you know, the police is not their first answer. They turn to their neighbors. You text your friends when you get home, right? Like there's a way that we can be more engaged as communities in keeping ourselves safe, and that we need to develop these alternatives so that as we think about policing, we can be more clear about what policing actually serves in our society and what the needs actually are.
Sharon in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Love your show. This is very timely. I am a former educator. I live in Harlem. We are currently through a program called My School Votes, it's recruiting young people to think about voting. And if they're too young to vote, they can register and they'll at 17 and they can get the vote. But the real piece about this is that we're looking at intervention in our schools and our high schools with our young people. And yesterday I was just telling your screener that we had an opportunity to go sit to invite to a high school and to talk to young people about voting, but even more importantly, how they see their community. And one of the things that came up in that discussion was that they didn't feel empowered in their community. There's a lot of heavy policing going on, as you know, with our new mayor. He's got, you know, to deter violence, but it's really heightening the mental state of our young people. Not that they're going crazy, but they want to have a sense of hope. And so one of the things that we're doing through this program, My School Votes, is to really get and talk to our young people about how they see their community, how they can envision their community. And so we have gotten together with one of our council people who is going to give us space where we can meet with our young people, bring families in and talk about how they re-envision this community, and then giving them the tools to do so. We also know that many of them have lost loved ones through COVID. And so you now have that mental duress that's going on too, also now. So what we are really reaching out to our young people, and you know, it's going to have to happen at a grassroots level. The community has to do this work. Mayor Adams, for whatever reason, he's come. I know he's a police officer. He has a mentality, but we really need to have a mental health support, because we are in a mental health crisis. The policing is a crisis. All right, that over policing, that doesn't give the young people a chance to say, I can do something about this. I'm empowered to do something about it. So we've done outreach in our community along 125th Street. We've talked to community members who've seen the changes in the community, but they're not comfortable. They're frightened because they see so much many police and there's so many things happening. The gang violence, you know, with the guns and what you were talking about earlier, that's real. That's real. And we just want to give our kids a chance to fight for their community.
How do you think the mayor is doing, Sharon, and city council for that matter, at allocating resources for the mental health crisis and the mental health treatments that you're talking about?
I'll be honest with you, Brian, they're not doing enough. They don't see it as, they don't see it as a support. And that's one of the things that, I'm very it's just an area where we really have to tap into that. As far as the money, yes. I talked to one of our city council persons the other day and told them, I said, look, you got a budget, you got to allocate money for mental health services for young people. It has to be added. And she's one of the newer council persons that is running, but we also know we are holding everybody's feet to the fire, and we're fighting for our young
people. Sharon, thank you so much for your call. Yeah, mental health is one of the things that the mayor talks about the most, Antonine. I wonder if you see the resources flowing from his budget or, for that matter, from the city council's budget. You know, we have this presumably more progressive than ever city council, more people of color than ever, majority female for the first time. What's city council doing relative to the mayor on the mental health resources front, if you look at it at that granular level?
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing, and folks have seen that in the mayor's executive budget that was released late last month, that he put in $55 million for mental health programming. And, you know, again, that pales in comparison to the $182 million that we see going into NYPD. And, you know, the program, this Be Heard program, there are a lot of questions around this program, right? It's a pilot that started less than a year ago. And there are a lot of questions about the results and the resources. And where, you know, where we really want to be is holding that $55 million and getting even more for our communities when it comes to mental health, because, you know, we've been in this pandemic now for over 2 years. And so there isn't a person, I believe, on this earth who hasn't had some deep mental health impacts coming out of the pandemic. And in this budget year, when we actually, this is not an austerity budget, but it is being organized like one. This is actually the year where we need to see, you know, we need to see recovery. We need to see resources coming into mental health, right? I know that you all have been talking on the show about what's going on in Buffalo. And, you know, our Invest in Black Futures report, everything that we talk about in terms of the health impacts to Black folks here in New York City, when you look at the numbers, they're similar across big cities. And when you look at Buffalo, what we have is a Black community that was already under siege in terms of not getting resources that it needs from its city, county, and state elected officials. And then on top of that, we've had this white supremacist attack. Again, you know, folks who maybe are super downstate like me, always lived in Brooklyn, you may not realize that Buffalo is a Rust Belt town. There's nothing more American than a city like Buffalo. And now, like, with this white supremacist attack, you've got more mental health issues, but then you've got these concurrent crises where, like, you know, do people have mental health programming, but do they also have housing? What's the food access looking like? And so this is why we work with folks like, I want to shout out Black Love Resisting the Rust and Felicia Brown for some of the amazing Black-led work that they're doing on the ground here. Because if we had this kind of attack happening in New York City, it would mushroom all of the other problems that we already see in Black communities. We're literally one tragedy away from all of what's happening with Black New Yorkers just falling apart.
If you're just joining us, we have a few more minutes with Antonin Pierre, executive director of the Brooklyn Movement Center. She has a daily news op-ed called What Mayor Adams Gets Right and Wrong About Gun Violence. And Angela in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Angela.
Hi, how are you doing? Oh, my gosh. Okay, so
quickly, as I was telling the screener, I agree with both women, the guests. And I would like to add, one, the police to me should be more involved, like on the ground with the kids, some kind of Big Brother program, you know, so that they can see the police officers in a different light. And the other point that I wanted to bring up is that some children in these communities that are underserved, they have relatives that are police officers. So for, and they know that these their relatives are good, decent police officers. So to hear, you know, some of the derogatory things that are being said about someone in their family, I think we can't lose sight of that. You know, let's think about those children and those families. But also, let's have some preventative measures. Like, I'm just driving down, and I know you know Brooklyn, Brian, Vanderbilt Avenue right off of the, I just hit Atlantic Avenue. Uh-huh. And when I look at, as that neighborhood has changed, all of the beautiful, wonderful, you know, exercise and this, and it just looks beautiful, right? And then I think about Utica Avenue and Crown Heights. There's some things that's going on there, but you get to know that the appearance of the community is about to change when you see these cute, lovely, wonderful things go up ahead of time, right? So why... Yeah, our community needs to have more. We need to have more. We need to be proactive, not reactive. These kids need places to go. You know, Brian, I'm a retired teacher. Mm-hmm. They need to be involved. The mental health, oh my gosh, we definitely need more mental health. It should be, I think I saw something online where they asked a question, should mindset awareness be something, a class as mandatory, you know, part of the requirements. We need to have those things that's not just, you know, with buzzwords every time, you know, the DOE changes. We have all these new things to do. There's some things that consistently need to be addressed with these children on a regular basis. When I asked about in my school about having a program for children who, you know, suffered a loss of COVID, you know, we have to be careful about labeling these children. So I don't know, but we need to address the mental health issues free in a public school level consistently, not the psychologist being there maybe once a week and having all of these cases. The children are at risk in the school, 31 years teaching, middle school. I see that. The parents need help. Oh, my gosh. It's a lot going on. Let's be proactive, not reactive. There's definitely places where we can put that money. And some of these people that come in that raise the rate of the rent so that we can no longer afford to put in the neighborhood, they should be obligated, I'm sorry, to, you know, to give to the community, mm-hmm. to guarantee whatever, you know, if you're going to benefit, you know, off of these expensive apartments that may be less than Manhattan, but can suit your needs or whatever, and then put something that can benefit the community free, not raising the prices of everything. You know, we're not thinking about taking care of one another. I mean, I could go on and on and on because this is all capitalism.
Angela, so
right?
with all of that, and you made so many good yes. points, how do you think Mayor Adams is doing, and for that matter, City Council, if you pay attention at that level, in this new term?
Well, Mayor Adams, I think I did, and I, you know, it's funny because I was trying to recall, like, I heard him address either after-school program or housing. I think his thing is housing. But let's, and you know, let's see what he's going to do. Who are the people that he has around him? And, you know, to be honest, I have things going on. So I'm not really looking at the city council, but I will now. You know, when she mentioned majority women, people of color, I definitely will look now and pay attention and see what needs to be done. And give some suggestions, mm-hmm. but you know, you have the wrong people asking questions and saying things, you know, that's like me being in a DOE. You have people who are administrators and never been in a classroom that want to tell teachers what to do. So you have politicians that maybe have not lived in their neighborhood and they want to give suggestions of what they think people in their neighborhood need. And I think, I'm sorry, I don't remember the young lady's name. She said, people have to be a part of the conversation. The second woman who spoke, you have to allow the people you're trying to serve to be a part of the conversation. Don't come in and say, this is what we're going to do. Listen to everybody. And the ones who aren't doing well, you really need to listen to them. The students who are suffering, the families who are in crisis, the kids who are in and out of, you know, juvenile. ask them. Those are the ones you really need to listen to.
Thank you very much, Angela. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me go on and on and on.
You're good to listen to. Antonin, as we wrap up the segment, get really specific if you can, because here we are in budget season. The mayor and the council are discussing and debating and negotiating over exactly these kinds of things. How much are they going to put in before the new fiscal year starts in July, and they need to wrap up all the numbers, you know, into mental health, into housing, into these longer term things, in addition to the police, which we know are going to be funded. Are there specific bills or programs that you want to wrap this up by saying, hey, City Council and Mayor Adams, do this one now and do it big, one or two?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, when we talk about Be Heard and we talk about the $55 million that's currently pledged in the executive budget for mental health programming, we're not talking about is the fact that New York State is about to go through an implementation of 988, which will be a new mental health phone number, emergency phone number like 911, but it'll be 988. And so this is a statewide implementation that's happening. And what we want to see is that implementation really carry the emergency responses that we need. We want to see the collaboration between the city and state. And we really just want to make sure that we're getting programming. In particular, you know, there are these mobile crisis units that run out of several hospitals. And they're, you know, I think what is so awesome about mobile crisis teams is that these are people who understand how to work around mental health. They understand de-escalation. They come in under 2 hours. And they're in your community. They're people who look like you. They're people who speak your language. And that is, you know, when you're calling mobile crisis team, you're not calling the cops, you're calling a mobile crisis team. And I think with Be Heard, it's not always clear who is going to come when you make that call. And so we really need the council to, one, make sure that everything that we're doing around mental health is actually folded into a statewide 988 implementation. And two, that the resources at the ground level are actual resources that that folks can actually use around mental health.
Antonin Pierre, Executive Director of the Brooklyn Movement Center. She has a daily news op-ed called What Mayor Adams Gets Right and Wrong About Gun Violence. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks so much, Brian. Great to be here. And definitely, folks, look at our Invest in Black Futures report.